갑시다.
Oh, holy shit. And hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. It's me, Brock Dittus, your host, for the first time in 2 months. Can you believe it?
How am I supposed to follow that?
With the script.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We
know notes.
You're doing so well. We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations, really irreverent conversations, about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering trains and transit. Oh, wait, I should have said bicycling, then trains and transit.
In that order.
Then simpler living.
In that order.
Yes. And today.
Today.
Well, memoirs.
Yes.
Bicycling memoirs. Maybe some sibling rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
Or bonding, too. You know.
Perfect. We are here in the room with identical twins, Brian Benson and Leah Benson.
Yeah. True.
Magic.
Little known fact, they are also fraternal twins.
They're fraternal and identical.
They're only identical fraternal twins. Are you fraternal identical or identically fraternal?
We don't answer any questions about that.
Okay. We just don't talk about that.
Sorry.
It's like the Klingons and how they didn't have ridges in the 60s.
Where did those ridges go?
We'll talk about that in another podcast. Dan Flores is also in the room with us. Hello.
Hey, what up?
Hey, do you want a burrito?
Because that's still cool, right?
Yeah.
What the? That's...
So...
1990s called. They don't want their catchphrase back.
And the levels have spiked once again. If you're listening to these sequentially, you will have just heard me talking about how I hate the city of Portland and I wish I'd never come back to it.
I don't think you said hate.
I didn't say that, no. But I think it'd be easy to assume that I had all this angst once I'd returned to the city I loved after I was away from it. And I want to retract all of those statements because coming home after traveling is kind of a bitch. It's hard to do, I think, depending on how you do it. And I don't know if we said this or not when we were taping, but you caught me at the golden moment when I had all of that angst balled up inside me before I had talked to any of my friends. So
it's like the
you
top
mean
of the
any
bell
of your
curve.
Friends excluding us.
Yes. You were the first friends I talked to.
Well, I think that was part of why because we were over at Los Gorditos.
Yes, eating a burrito.
Yes. And part of the reason why we jumped at the chance to record this was because it was kind of this golden moment of, I don't know if cynicism is the right word, culture shock at the very least.
Yes.
In the upper levels of mathematics, we call that a maxim.
A maxim.
Yeah, you're at the maximum, the height
okay.
of the parabola.
Gotcha. So that's where I was.
I'm making words up.
That's okay. I was at the height of the bell curve.
There you go.
Of my cynicism about the town I love.
Isn't that a zenith?
I don't know, man.
Oh. I thought it was a hyacinth.
I think if you take the derivative, it's zero.
Okay. So then, maybe. I just want to take this small short moment to patch up. Like if anybody heard me say that the wrong way, I don't want it to be taken the wrong way. If you haven't heard that, just don't worry about it. Don't even listen to it.
I think I put it best. If I can brag about myself here.
As Aaron says,
stopped you before.
I've often said, yes.
A wise man once said, a wise man by the name of me.
Yes.
It's kind of a counterbalance to sort of this, I don't know, overly great picture that we kind of paint of Portland. And, I love Portland. I always will. I think I said I hope to die here someday.
And I said I hope you don't.
Well, I mean, eventually, but Portland's awesome, but, it's still life. Shit gets in the way.
It is an actual city with vehicles with combustion engines.
Yes.
What were you saying earlier? They said they were coming for Division Street, and I didn't care because I lived on.
Because I did not live on Division Street.
I didn't live on Division.
And then they came for Foster Powell, and I said nothing because I did not live on Foster Powell.
Foster Powell.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that was actually, that was the crux of your angst, right? Was like,
this, well, it was the redevelopment.
This city
is,
yeah, this city's totally not the city I left.
Yeah, and at the risk of repeating myself, I left in denial of the development on Division Street, and I came back to the fully realized development on Division Street and said, well, shit. So I think it just takes time to readjust and be like, well, the things I love are still here. They just don't look like they used to.
Do you feel like it's your fault?
No, but it's possible.
Well, how many city meetings have you gone to, you know?
Well, again,
have you done your civic duty?
I did not live on Division Street. So yeah, exactly. No, it's good to be back. Just suffice to say that. The only thing I have to complain about is the goddamn heat. It is so hot today. This is a day, I was telling somebody earlier, this is a play, I've often said, this is a day in which I woke up and there was no cool breeze to kiss my face on the way out the door to work. Like, it was already lukewarm and tepid on the way in at like 6 in the morning.
This is not a metaphor for your marriage.
No, this is the weather. And not in a welcome to Night Vale sort of way. This is the weather as it exists today. The weather, it was warm and kind of muggy this morning, and it only got more so. And there's some smoke, which I haven't confirmed, but I think like the fires are strong this year, and I think there's some smoke.
Like coming down from Washington?
In the air.
Or from somewhere in Oregon? Or
tonight?
Yes, I can feel it. It's... Ka-ching. We've got this confluence of things. And someone had said there was supposed to be like a thunderstorm tonight. So I actually kind of hope that's the case, because that would break the humidity and it would all fall and refresh us wonderfully.
Yeah. Well, there is quite a lot of cloud cover.
Yeah. Right now, yeah.
Which is not necessarily that normal for this time of year.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. And that's been the weather.
So. That's the weather. That's Brock with the weather.
So, yeah. One thing I was thinking about. Anybody in here seen the movie Limitless?
Limitless?
Ow.
I don't think I've ever seen Limitless.
That was ironic.
I would watch a movie, though, called that.
Limitless with Bradley Cooper, the sexiest man alive, like 2 years ago or something. It's the movie where he like takes drugs and he goes from being some... kind of a slacker to being like this day trader who can make all these computations in his mind instantly. But then he runs out of drugs and he crashes. And I realized that's how I've felt after coming off of a bike tour. Because the bike tour...
You're out of drugs?
The bike tour was the drugs.
Oh, right.
And it got me all whipped into shape. And for like 2 or 3 days, I was riding around in my highest gear, like charging up hills and everything.
Yikes.
And now I'm crashing and I cannot ride my bike fast anymore. So I don't... Brian, have you experienced this? Did you ever have... Like a Superman era right after a tour, and then like you're like, why can't I do what I used to do?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
It's a different kind of riding, right? You're used
riding.
To riding that tank, mm-hmm. and there's something specific about doing that. But yeah, then taking the weight off. I think I expect myself to be a superhero after coming back from a tour, and then when I'm not, it's really just sad.
Right.
And I'm getting passed, and I'm not going that fast.
Right.
And everything is bad.
Right. I got passed today. I think that was what did it. I'm just an angry person. I've got to work on this. It's coming out more and more. But no, it was just like the whole feeling of like I'm going up this hill. And I remember like 2 or 3 days ago, I was just charging up it. And maybe it's because it was hot and humid, or maybe it's because I didn't sleep as much last night as usual. But I feel like I'm losing the tour magic. And at some point, usually it's like maybe late September, early October, it starts raining. And then I feel like the hill away from work is insurmountable. And I have to take the bus home, and I try and fight that as long as I can. I usually get to about mid-December before my first bus ride home from work. So, yeah. And then February, it takes an upswing because we get that little banana week.
Banana?
Is that, what do they call
I
it?
I like that.
What do they call it?
Banana.
The banana belt where, like, where
oh,
the
where
bananas
like the tropical,
grow.
Like the tropical weather sort of, or the warm winds from the tropics.
Yes.
Kind of sweep up.
Right.
I thought you were
right.
going in like a Gwen Stefani.
I thought it was like
it's bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yeah, stick with banana week, whatever it means.
Whatever it means.
Exactly.
It means banana hammock week. No?
Well,
okay. No.
It could for some.
No.
I choose to go a different direction with that.
It's not a good week.
Every week is banana hammock week for me.
Dan Flores, ladies and gentlemen.
Prove it.
No.
I like that you're actually getting up out of your chair as though you're about to demonstrate that this is always true. This is not good. And that's why it's not a video podcast.
That's right. That's right.
So let's see. Anything else, Aaron, for you? What happened this week?
I showed this guy around Portland.
This guy being Dan Flores.
Yeah, we went to Bite of Oregon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was all right.
What does Oregon taste like?
Dirt. Yeah. And grass.
There's a lot of dust in the air.
Yeah.
What else did we do that day?
Went to the market, Saturday market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Saturday market.
Yeah, I got about halfway through, and then they rang the bell, and we're like, I wonder what that bell means. And then we kept walking through, and then they kept like shutting more and more stores down.
No, I've never been there for that.
Yeah. And then we got tased. Yeah.
Don't tase me, bro.
You tweakers, get out of here.
I guess that's, So
we did midnight. We did what could possibly have been.
Okay, so let's.
The worst midnight
mystery
ride. The
Baton Death March Midnight Mystery Ride.
Let's put a short time limit on this because we could talk about this for a long time, but I want to get to Brian Benson.
Yes.
This is not our podcast.
I missed out on this because I was already tired and had been drinking a lot by the time it came time to do the Midnight Mystery Ride, so
lucky.
I decided not to. How did this go?
Well, it started out good. So
it was midnight.
So let's condense a little bit. It didn't start till about 1:45.
well,
that,
it was 12:30.
That had to do. Maybe it was 12:30.
12:30. The leader showed up and they said
15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, that was maybe the indicator of what kind of ride this was going to be.
Uh-huh.
It doubled back on itself several times, which was kind of cool for a while. But I think very confusing for a lot of us.
It was cool because, I mean, I liked it because we were like blowing through traffic lights and then we had like corkers. In the Army, they're called road guards. But
we
had like corkers go in and stop people. And
I didn't know there was a corollary.
There is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there really is. That's
road
where I
guards.
Thought you guys
when,
got it from.
Whenever they
like,
bicycle in the Army, they have...
No, usually you're ruck marching with like a 100-pound ruck or 25. Who am I kidding? I fill mine with newspapers, you know?
Okay, gotcha.
But then you have like people blocking the road so you can like go through lights and stuff like
right,
that. So yeah,
right.
Kind of similar. And it was kind of neat. I kind of liked that, just going through downtown Portland in the middle of the night. But I thought they were doing it on purpose, but I think they were just, you know, lost. They didn't know where
to go. They had no idea where they were going.
Okay.
And it was what, about 2:30?
I mean, they knew where they were going. They knew Oregon. They knew Portland. They didn't know.
Well, they had no destination.
They had no destination.
In mind.
Okay. And there is a distinction there.
Yes.
Yeah.
At one point, I had stopped to help out somebody whose bike got caught in the tracks down at the South Waterfront.
First aid and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is because
I carry a first aid kit.
Because you are a Boy Scout.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Some things just never go away.
We were Boy Scouts together. I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
Scout's honor. So helped her out. But then we got separated and lost everybody, my brother included. Borrowed a phone, called him up, asked where he was. Of course, he doesn't know where he is.
I don't know. I'm not from this town.
Right. Where are you?
I
have no
I don't
idea.
Know.
But
help, I'm with strangers.
I guess they were
strange
close
danger.
To the Selwood Bridge.
Okay.
So from the South Waterfront, the rest of the crew got to the Selwood Bridge. The group I was with, we ended up by the Hawthorne Bridge. So there was like no way in hell we were going to go all the way over there. And
right.
In the meantime, at the Selwood Bridge...
At the Selwood Bridge, we're sitting there waiting, and I overhear this conversation. Oh, we can't stay here. The security in this office is real tight. They're going to kick us out pretty soon.
Yeah.
All right, 5 more minutes. It's like at 2:30. I'm like, oh my gosh, when does this ride end?
Well, and for anyone who's not familiar with the Midnight Mystery Ride, usually it's about a 5-mile ride that takes about 45 minutes.
Yeah, usually by 2:30, the fire's been going. You know,
food has been shared,
drinks have been shared,
or possibly the fire's been put out by the fire department,
or that. Yeah,
yeah.
So where did we start? Do you remember where we started?
We started at Cosmo Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, ironically in Selwood.
Yes.
But on
yes.
the other side.
But yes. on the other yeah. side.
A lot of looping back. Okay. And, they're not going to listen to this probably. You said the Cosmo Lounge does not know how to prepare a Cosmo, right?
They had difficulty.
Okay.
If you go to the Cosmo Lounge, you say I'd like a Cosmopolitan.
It's part of the record now.
What?
Yeah. Okay. Well, there we go. So anyways.
You'll probably get angry letters. That's okay. Blame me.
Send all your mail to Dan Flores. We'll forward it on. We'll just set up like an auto keyword sort of like
yeah, I can
right
field
to
those
you.
Questions.
Yes. All right. Well, anyway, I'm glad that, Dan, you were still experiencing the glory of Portland.
It was a lot of fun.
Land of rainbows and unicorns.
Yes.
And, yes. Well, let's move on to Brian Benson. We would like to talk to you about this book that you have just released. It is, I was going to say it's right here, but I don't know where it is in the room right now. Where is it?
It's under there.
It is. Going Somewhere, a memoir by Brian Benson. And let me read, I like this quote on the front here. This is Cheryl Strayed, best-selling author of Wild. She says, a tender, sexy, take it with you everywhere you go until you've read the last page, all hyphenated, beauty of a book. And I think I was telling you right before we started recording, I got the book today because I procrastinated. So my apologies. I have not yet finished it, but I like your style.
I'd leave if you hadn't locked the door.
Good thing we locked the door.
There's a little peek behind the curtain for you.
But thank you.
Yes. No, this is awesome. So tell us, first of all, how did you decide to write about a bicycle journey? Because a lot of people will take bicycle journeys at some point in their lives, but not everybody writes a book about it, much less writes a well-written book about it. So how did you decide to do this?
I mean, I'd written a decent amount before, but I hadn't done a lot of creative writing. It's actually really great that Leah's in the room. I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent just like right away here.
Perfect.
We were both in the Gifted and Talented program. They all have that like wherever you all grew up.
We're special.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like fourth grade, fifth grade, we got put on a bus and sent to the other tiny school. And we come from northern Wisconsin in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And so I got sent to this other classroom the end of the day on like a Wednesday or Thursday. And I got put into the intellectual group and Leah was in the creative group. What did you do?
So not only were you separated from the rest of the class,
yeah.
Then you were further separated from each other.
Just multiple levels of just bad messaging
this
for
is,
children.
Yeah, you know? This is like tracking at an early age.
Yeah. So what did you do in your workshop, Leah?
I can't actually remember, and I feel like I need to dispel a myth right here, which that is that Leah got into the Gifted and Talented creative program because she was creative.
When really you were talented?
I was talented. The actual story was that it was in fourth grade, and I remember I was kind of an anal retentive child who was really good at taking tests, but not particularly smart. And so I kept taking the Gifted and Talented test, and I kept failing it.
Oh.
And so they couldn't figure out how to get me in the Gifted and Talented program, and so they listed me as a creative.
Okay.
So, oh, no.
I know. I didn't want to, like...
That just blew my mind.
Yeah. Instead of, like,
because the reason
kid.
I was...
Instead of, like, normal average kid?
Yeah, I was just an average kid who was,
so
like...
So what about normal average kids that failed the Gifted and Talented test? How do we know they weren't a creative?
They've been lost to history.
Yeah.
Anyway, she was in that one. I always thought we basically just did like origami and toothpick bridges. That's all I remember. And I know that you did origami.
We did.
I remember
origami.
Us like having origami. But anyway, I kind of internalized that idea that I was smart and she was creative, whatever the hell that meant. And so, yeah, I like to write, but I would write history papers and really elaborate emails to friends and, a lot of other stuff, but never really considered creative writing until actually I was in Guatemala, which is where this book begins.
Right. The free first chapter is available online.
That, yeah. It's true. It is. Thank you for mentioning that. I forget.
Research.
You're good.
You Googled this book, didn't you?
Said it was a fish eagle.
There's a lot of Spanish at the beginning.
upwards of like seven words, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot for me. You know?
But I got the opportunity to write kind of a travel-oriented magazine that a guy from Lonely Planet had started.
Oh.
And just do some really, really weird stuff, right? Actually, with Leah, who I lived with while I was there, we wrote some satirical news articles and advice columns and just, a bunch of really fun stuff. And it was the first time I'd really experimented with creative writing.
Yeah.
And I had a blast doing it. So, I go on this trip with this woman, Rachel, who I met in Guatemala. And the trip was really amazing in a lot of different ways. And at the end of it, I decided... in this pretty just absurd moment that I was going to write a book without really having ever thought of writing a book before. So that there was no real build up to it. I wanted to do it. And I decided I was going to do it on this really hungover day when, we'd overdone it at a microbrew festival the night before. And we were both sweaty and hungover
it's
and not
the
really
best
talking.
Best time to make lifelong decisions.
Totally, yeah. I try to always make decisions then.
Yep.
So I just decided to write it, and I tried to start about 3 days after getting to Portland, and I wrote a first page, and I loved it, and then I read it the next day, and it was trash, and so I tried it again a few more days, and basically gave up for about a year, and then I finally got back into it.
Okay, yeah, so from nice,
that was
inception.
That's what we call a soundbite, right? A nice brief answer.
Yes. From the inception of the idea to the time that you actually kind of like had a voluminous tome of work, this was what, like about 2 years then?
No, it took quite a while. I guess I finished the first draft of it about a year ago.
Okay.
Something like that. And so that was a good 6 years after I had the original idea.
Gotcha.
So yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Well, the thing that strikes me immediately, and I was telling you this, Aaron, earlier, is that there are a lot of like travelogue style books. And I remember I got spoiled because I started with Joe Kermaski, the metal cowboy, who has written, I think, four full length books and a bunch of articles for Bicycling Magazine. He's a wonderful storyteller, great writer, that sort of thing. And I was like, actually, that's what inspired Adele to want to bicycle tour. And she dragged me along with her.
Yeah, you started with the metal cowboy.
Yes.
And then moved on to Janipar at some point.
Yeah, well, in Janipar by Tom Allen, which is also one of the, I consider it one of the high examples of like, this is a book you should read, you know, because it tells you why bicycle touring is great. But the trick is that if you go to, say, Multnomah County Library and look for books about bicycle touring, I remember just like placing holds on all of them. And I got this stack of books and I'm like, oh, I'm going to read all these great stories. And it was like, well, our hotel room kind of sucked, but then we rode 30 miles, and then we had a great lunch, and then we went and had some, you know, some wine, and then we didn't really like the hotel the next night, but you know, they did have a continental breakfast, and it just goes on like
That's
this.
Actually chapter four verbatim.
Oh shit! Okay. I didn't read far enough.
Sounds like the guy from Office Space. And I asked that the eggs weren't runny, and they were runny. And where's my stapler?
They said I could have my swing line. So it was just the idea that basically, yeah, I think there are. It's easy to write a sequential travelogue of events. It's not easy to take what it is that's great about bicycle travel or any kind of travel or life experience. It's not as easy to create a compelling work. So were you conscious of that when you started this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, okay. I had the vague idea that I wanted this to be about the trip, but really it was about where I was at that point, where I felt like a lot of people I knew were at, which was totally directionless, you know, and just facing lots of choices and not really sure what to do with them. And I took this program called the Athenaeum at the Attic Institute, which is actually pretty close to here, like 43rd and Hawthorne. And I got the chance to study with Cheryl Strayed and Karen Carbo. And both of them, amazing writers and really great teachers, brought up the idea of the situation and the story over and over again, which is a book by a woman, Vivian Gornick, who talks about, you know, writing nonfiction and how we get hung up on the situation all the time, which is like, what happened, right? And it's really easy to write about the situation, but actually figuring out what the story is, that thing that's somehow embedded in there that you're going to bring out that, you know, relates to other people rather than just saying like this and this and this and this. And that was hard to get at, a lot of work.
And that's one of the things that sets the Metal Cowboy and Janipar apart from all of these other
and Brian Benson.
And well, I was getting there.
Above that,
having not read it.
Brian falls somewhere in the middle, but he attempted to do it.
It's following this overall.
You know, the important thing is that he tried.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, there you go.
Talented.
But yeah, it's following this overall arc of story and development versus just, like you were saying, talking about what happened. Basically reporting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, thank you for doing that, because I feel like there's a need for that. There's a need for more storytellers and there's a need for less situations. I don't know. I mean, but we all have situations in our lives already. We know what those are like, and they're not that much fun to read about. But if you can find stuff, like if you can isolate what happened, what did you want? How did you get there? Those are the interesting and compelling stories.
Well, thank you. So, appreciate that.
So without giving away basic plot points, I don't want to, like, you know, spoil the book.
What did he say? Butler dies in the end.
Did he make it to Portland?
Wait, the butler dies? Of course, yeah.
Rosebud. What were you looking for on this trip?
I was looking for a couple of things, I guess. So, you know, when I met Rachel, who I took the trip with, it was after I'd been backpacking for a while. I thought for a while longer, actually. I'd had this plan to take about a year-long trip from northern Mexico to southern Argentina with a friend of mine. And, you know, we planned forever and saved money for the better part of a year. And then we took off on this trip. And after like 4 weeks, I realized I hated backpacking just so much, because I was sitting there, you know, this waterfall and that rune site and having the same conversations with the same people at hostels and feeling both like I wasn't enjoying it, and then just deeply shameful about that, because I knew how privileged I was to be doing that kind of thing and then to not even enjoy it. So I stopped in this town, Quetzaltenango, in the western part of Guatemala. And I met Rachel there within a few days of getting to town, basically. And she was singing in a jazz band It was kind of like, I'm going to reference Who Framed Roger Rabbit here, but like the Teddy Valiant Jessica Rabbit scene where, you know, I'm just like the dude in the audience, slack jaw, and it was really embarrassing. And
right,
like,
right.
I remember this moment clearly. Rachel does not recall it at all. But, you know, she was so driven and focused, and so she had a lot of very specific ideas about what she wanted to do with herself and who she wanted to be. And so I was really drawn to that. And one of the ideas she had was taking this trip across the state. She wanted to take a bike trip. I'd never considered doing that specifically. I mean, I always liked taking big adventures, and I'd grown up biking, but never in that way. So yeah. I wanted to do it because it sounded exciting as a big, vague adventure to take. And I just wanted to be with her, too. I was so enthralled with her. So being able to, like, isolate your puppy love and, you know, put it out in the Montanan tundra or whatever I was imagining before we went on this trip seemed like a really great thing to do. Because I was also super insecure about the relationship. So it seemed like, great. Can just like lock it down out here. We're not going to talk to anybody for 2 months. And that was my plan.
Yeah. So the point that I'm at in the book, since I started reading it about 2 hours ago, was where you, where she says, we're going to ride our bikes to Portland. And you were like, oh yeah, really? And I think you mentioned something about how you would have preferred a destination where you and she were on level footing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really interesting point. Because she grew up in Portland, mm-hmm. and this was home for her. And so she says, you know, we're going to go back. And you reference her having a life that was kind of developed there. Mm-hmm. And you would have had to do a lot of catching up. So I thought that was an interesting point. Like the whole, let's choose a place that that maybe would create a different situation for both of us.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a power dynamic in any relationship always, right? But it can be really enhanced by place if one person has connections to it. I know I've been in that spot on both sides of it quite a bit. Actually, think of like Leah and I, you know, we've been kind of hopscotching. I guess it's more frequently been the place that I've come to first, but it can set up a weird dynamic in our relationship too, by virtue of nothing besides that, like, one person has spent more time somewhere, you know, and so they have more friends at first, or they have more connections to the place.
Right.
And I always move there and make more friends.
But then Leah wins inevitably.
And then
yeah.
Win.
And then you have to go find somewhere else.
Yeah, I lost really fast, friends. Actually. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm charming.
Yep. And supportive.
I have the same burden. I have the same burden.
It's really hard.
It's true.
It's hard being the fun one.
Yep. Well, tell us some of the things that you liked about traveling by bicycle, because you didn't like backpacking.
Mm-mm.
Or at least you didn't like the experience that you had with it,
and
it wasn't
was
what you hoped
point.
It would be. Yeah. So what was it about bicycle touring that was different from backpacking?
You know, there are a lot of different things about it. I mean, one of the first things that come to mind is just how much I needed other people, how frequently and how just how many people I got to meet, really generous strangers, and see the best side of people, you know, because I was in the middle of nowhere all the time and would have broken spokes or wouldn't have filled a water bottle or would just be like in a grocery store looking super dazed and sweaty. And just having that bike there, a reason to start a conversation was, and yeah, I see you nodding, definitely was
right.
I mean, just such a great way to get past talking about the weather or whatever people will talk about, in not to knock the beginning of the show that was enthralling with that conversation. But you know, just how quickly you can
I don't want to be one of those people. Yep.
We're looping back like the Midnight Mystery Ride.
But you know how quick you get to having a conversation with someone who was a stranger within 5 minutes. I mean, so I did a bike tour. Still bad at doing that. I'd like to, in support of this
tour?
Book, a bike book tour I did in Wisconsin nice. Over the past month. And, you know, there was this situation where I ended up staying with a guy who he'd never hosted somebody before on a bike tour. He'd taken some himself. But within 3 hours of meeting him and about four PBRs, he put me to bed in the tent in the backyard and said, I love you. And he caught himself at the end of it and slid in a man. But you could tell that was just
I love you, man.
But it was just from having that connection. And, you know, I think it's because
whoa, hey, Brian cannot be tied down right this
I like you.
Brian's got to be free.
You're all right.
The Benz here has to fly.
I don't think I've ever gotten that nickname before. Of course.
Can't cage a free bird.
Right, right. Let's see. Oh, I've totally lost it. Did you have a thought?
I mean, I'm curious to hear what you found as well. You know, I guess another thing out there was just both with somebody else, but I've taken some trips on my own as well. And just those moments when I'm in the middle of nowhere, you know, and like rural Montana, and it's hot and it's not particularly pretty out, and there's nothing happening and no cars are passing, but I just kind of realized that I'm out there just because I chose to do it. Mm-hmm. Nobody has any idea why I'm there or that I'm there. And there's just something really simple and beautiful about that, you know, knowing that you're out there for that reason, just because you wanted to do it. And
right.
That's why you're enjoying it.
Yeah, totally. I can get behind that a lot. And Aaron, you've done less touring than I have, but you probably
you feel insecure about that, Aaron?
Very.
At some point, you probably also had the feeling of like, well, here I am. And it's always is, like you say, like when you're in the middle of nowhere somewhere and you just kind of, maybe you stop to take a drink of water or something. You look around and you're like, well, here I am. And, you know, I'm going to be here for a while. It took a while to get here. And this is existence.
I think there was a number of times. Usually it's kind of when I'm almost right in the middle of each camp,
mm-hmm.
like after packing up for the day and heading out. But, you know, sometime before arriving at my destination, you know, you take a break for water or whatever, you take a look around, and I'm realizing, one, I probably have not seen this stuff before, and realizing, oh my God, I'm seeing this for the first time.
Right.
And there's something really magical about just seeing something that not only is for the first time, but has been there for ages. Having this realization of, oh my God, and I got here like under my own power too.
Right. And it's easy because that's kind of almost like buzzwordy. I feel like we talk about this a lot. It's easy to be like, yeah, and it's all human powered and whatnot. And I mean, if you strip away...
It's one thing to rationalize it. It's another thing to really viscerally experience it.
Right. You know? If you strip away like the idealism or the political thoughts behind it or like the exercise goals or whatever it is, whyever you're doing this, and you're just like, here I am. I'm nowhere. Or yeah. I'm like somewhere with nothing else around me. I think that's fascinating.
That's what it felt like for me to come to this studio. I'm not used to biking.
I'm glad
all the time.
So you had that.
I had that same experience when I got here.
On like 30th and Division somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wish everyone could see the sincerity in his face. That was really well done.
I'm in a lot of pain.
Well, you don't do this as much, Dan, as we do, right?
So this
to be expected. Don't feel bad about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's what separates it from backpacking, though, or at least the way that I backpacked, you know, meaning just having a backpack full of crap that you take from city to city.
Yeah.
Because you just arrive in a destination that you've been thinking about for a while and like, oh, yeah, it's a waterfall. Cool. Now I'm going to hop on another bus. But, yeah, if you ride your bike for however many miles, you get there and whatever it is, if it's like a Cenex station with old hot dogs, it's still sweet.
Yeah,
this is the best thing ever.
I know that place.
Yep.
That you do.
Yeah. No, that is the thing. It's like maybe the how do we say this? Like the place that's been built up and has a reputation and has a lot to live up to is never going to be as awesome as people have said it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the place you've heard nothing about, the Cenex station with the hot dogs, or a beautiful view of the ocean, or of of the supermoon when you're out in the plains or something like this. Like, these are all things that you didn't expect to see, and you kind of happen upon them, mm-hmm. but they are the memorable things, and that's kind of what sticks with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Actually, one more thing to add. I think Leo will have something to weigh in as well. You get to eat like a total asshole.
Yeah, you do.
You know,
yeah, you do.
Yeah.
I kind of set you up for that one. But I learned everything I know about eating too much candy from my sister. So,
you like stuffing your face with fries and you're like, more fries.
Yeah.
More ketchup.
Well, here, let's do this. Yeah. Round the room. No one gets exempt. Everyone is going to share their favorite shame food. And I will start. Because
favorite shame food?
Yes.
Okay. Like specifically to bike touring or just
Say connected to bike touring, because I just ended a bike tour and I am no longer burning like 8,000 calories a day, but I ate an entire 7-Eleven 555 pizza today. I am not proud of this. I didn't think I was going to say this, but this is a thing that I did today and I ate the whole thing, and I know very soon I will not be able to do that again. Like, I don't feel bad about it today because I was like, oh, I burned 8,000 calories like 5 days ago.
What time did you eat it at?
About noon.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. Here to go.
Okay, next shame food. Who?
I don't know if this counts as a shame food because I still eat it quite often.
Are you ashamed of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
Counts?
I'm ashamed. This is a pretty heavy word, actually, to be throwing around. A little embarrassed that I eat this fairly regularly.
Bring it out. Bring it out.
All right. All right.
We're all friends. Safe space.
But safe space. Yeah, ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, especially like the really fatty.
That's
like,
it?
Like sorry, heavy cream. Like, I know everyone's like, ah, you mean it, you asshole.
I ate a plate last night by myself.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Some of my favorite things to do, especially on bike tour or right after a bike tour, is to just grab that thing, you know, pint or whatever of the very premium fatty ice cream and just, you know, gorge down.
And we would mention the name of that company if they would sponsor the Sprocket podcast. But unfortunately, you know, empty space. We may never know Aaron's favorite ice cream.
We may not. Yeah. Dan.
It's nothing special, but sometimes I like to go to gas stations late at night. And I'm not just not biking. Just usually looking for food.
Yep.
And I get like the prepackaged, you know, totally not right, should not exist on this planet, high calorie bear claws.
Bear claws.
Pastry and butter and sugar. Topped with sugar and fat and butter and sugar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. In multiple layers.
Yes.
Should we put a trigger warning at the beginning of this episode?
Yeah, I guess
for anyone
so.
With,
those of you who have like sort of dietary triggers.
We can only apologize now. Brian.
The worst one I can think of is actually the morning after I found out that an agent was going to represent this book.
Oh, yeah?
I was super excited. I got into this small Montana town the night before, too late for the grocery store. So I woke up and went in there and decided that for breakfast, I was going to celebrate by eating an entire bag of candy corn.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Oh, yes.
That was an awesome idea for like 7 minutes. That was super high energy. Like, this is the greatest day ever. This is what I wanted to eat when I was a little kid, and it's as good as I expected. And then after those 7 minutes, it was just awful.
Well, this is the thing. And my radio hero, Rick Emerson, has often said, candy corn will turn on you because you get a certain amount of distance into the bag, and somehow like what it's made of doesn't – it reacts differently on your tongue than it does at the beginning. Like you have the candy corn, and it tastes awesome. And then all of a sudden, you're like, this is the worst thing I could possibly be eating. And you know this.
The trick is to, you want to eat it as like quickly enough that your body cannot react before you finish the entire bag.
That's healthy.
Pro tip.
Okay, there we go. This should only be attempted if you're on a bicycle tour.
You want to eat the whole bag before you pass out in a diabetic coma. You know?
The people of the Sprocket are not dietitians.
That should be said.
Nor
yes.
are we licensed to any health professional.
We're not recommending this. We are telling you about our mistakes.
Yes.
Leah?
I feel very little shame about the food that I eat.
Oh, so we know this is going to be good then.
Yeah, okay, so first off, candy corn is like perfect because I feel like that was when I realized how much I love snacks and sugar and stuff was when Brian and I were kids. We always had this jar that was filled with candy corn right around the holidays, and there was a certain noise that it made when you opened it, and I was always trying to sneak the candy corn without our mom hearing it, and she would always hear it, and I remember just thinking, like, the best part about being an adult is that I can eat as much shit as I want to,
right?
Like, whenever I want to, and that's totally the truth. It's the best part about being an adult, but the only time I remember shame from eating is there was a time that I didn't come back from bike touring. I was walking back from a friend's house after watching Planet Earth, and you can infer what we may have been doing while watching Planet Earth. And I found myself really hungry upon coming home. And so I was like, man, pizza would be great. And so I looked at my phone, and during a moment of sheer brilliance earlier in my life, I had saved pizza into my phone.
Like the phone number for pizza?
Yeah, and so I dialed pizza. And the voice on the other hand goes, 555, 5 medium, 1 topping pizzas for $5 a piece. And I was like, well, that's a great deal. And so I ordered myself 5 medium, 1 topping pizzas.
It's not bad. Well, it's just
was
one
really
topping.
Hungry. Yeah. And then I went home. And at this time, I lived in a studio apartment.
Okay.
And it was quite obvious that I lived alone. Uh-huh. And I started to feel some shame about the fact that a pizza delivery person was going to come and deliver me 5 medium pizzas.
So the deal is already done. They're on the way, but they're not there yet. And no. You're already having these thoughts.
Yeah,
okay,
so I just turned down a bunch of music. And like did my best to make it seem like maybe I was having a party and my friends were like,
you, like recreate that scene in Home Alone where he's got like the mannequins dancing.
Totally.
Got the strings going.
I was ready. And like the pizza delivery guy
they're in the
came.
Bathroom. I need the pizzas.
And I was like,
yeah,
hey,
all
thanks.
Of them. All of them.
Yeah. But end of the story, I totally ate all 3 pizzas all by myself in one night.
I am very impressed. Good job.
Yeah. That sounds
good
awesome.
Job.
That's something to be proud of.
You should get an award for that trophy.
Like if you want like pepperoni ham, then you just take one slice of pepperoni, throw the slice of ham on top, and then just eat them both together. That sounds awesome.
And if becomes, you want, you can like triple decker things. Like
it's like a really
blown
good calzone. I'm curious, Brian, as you were traveling.
Good save.
Just move right off of this. I'm curious, as you were traveling from one place to another, you go from Wisconsin to somewhere, and along the way, you meet some people. You talked about meeting people, like the bike being a conversation starter or mm-hmm. something that makes it easier to connect with strangers, that sort of thing. What were kinds of people that you met?
Oh, man, all across the board. You know, on this trip and many others, you know, one guy I remember right from the beginning of the trip, I had factory-built wheels. I didn't know what that meant at the mm-hmm. time. And what it means is they're built by a robot really fast and that they break. So I blew spokes on the second day of the trip.
Ooh.
And so Rachel and I, you know, after catching a couple of rides and ending up in this small town in Wisconsin, met this guy named Jeff who owned a secondhand store. And it closed, I think, pretty quick, actually, after we were in town. But we ended up in front of the store. His son just happened to be there. And called his dad. And then Jeff was about 7 foot tall. I'm not exaggerating here. 7 foot tall and almost 500 pounds. Just
wow.
enormous. And he was a car mechanic who worked on bikes. He couldn't ride bikes. He said he had not found a bike that he would not do damage to just because of his size.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, he did all this work on the bike, trued the wheel up, replaced the spoke, wouldn't accept any money. Drove us like from the park that we were at back to that park again. Wouldn't let us get him breakfast in the morning. Just super, super kind guy. Who had this ridiculous backstory about like beating up cops and getting chased all over the state.
Yikes.
And being in prison. But it was just super kind too. You know, you could tell he was in the midst of a right behind basically a big transformation in his life. So
yeah.
You know, I met him, met people who were very well off and were able to offer a lot. Met some folks in central North Dakota who like clearly had almost nothing to offer, but still cooked us a big meal and put us up in a trailer. Met one guy who might have been a serial killer. That was less fun. And I mean, he probably wasn't, but he really.
But he had a creepy vibe.
Yeah, it was a state where meth addiction was a pretty big problem, and I think that was probably going on. But by and large, just like really, really generous people, and people from all different walks of life who all had the same kind of response, like, wow, those are weird bikes, and you're clearly vulnerable because, you know, what are you going to do? Steal something and bike away at 7.5 miles an hour. So.
we kind of know where you're going.
You'll never catch me, coppers.
Exactly. Yeah. It's I like the variety, and if you're open to it, you get to meet a ton of different kinds of people. I'm curious. This is a selfish question because I find having done some bicycle touring that I am. You might not know this. It might surprise you, but I'm going through a cynical phase. but I think for me, having done a couple of bike tours and kind of having experienced these things and loving them, at some point I find that I close myself off to connecting with people. I don't know if you've experienced that.
During the trip?
Yeah.
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 Well, it takes so much energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found that particularly I just did this tour in support of the book.
Right.
And so like I was doing readings and seeing people that I knew from when I was younger and meeting new folks as well. And yeah, you know, at the end of a day where I was maybe trying to write a blog post and then riding like 70 miles and encountering all these new things to come into someone's home who's being extremely generous, you know, and respond to that, to reciprocate it and be there in the way that they're being there for you is really difficult. So yeah, sometimes I'd choose like, that ditch looks kind of all right. I'm just going to do that tonight.
Well, I was going to ask, do you have anything you've come up with to either stave that off or deal with it?
I think it's always just that kind of, that tipping point into it, you know, where, I think any transition always in an average day can seem exhausting, you know, going from one moment to the next and just really shifting into something different. And especially on a trip and just allowing myself to remember, yeah, this is going to be super exhausting for a little bit. But after like 15 minutes, I'll forget that I wasn't doing it 15 minutes before. And then it's just, it's where I'm at, and, you mm-hmm. know, it's who I'm spending time with.
Yeah. Kind of like muscling down, unless you're bonking.
Right.
Unless either you have not enough calories in your system to allow you to ride, or not enough like emotional equivalent of calories to support you through the talking
right.
and handshaking.
Yeah,
things.
And then if that's not going to go well, just run away. And
right.
Hide in the park.
Yeah, or know how to get what you need, I guess. Yeah. Huh. Okay. Yeah, I'm still thinking about this, so it's good to know it's not an isolated experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like it's so many different types of energy at the same time, so being able to maintain that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. How was this this book bike tour? Because that's not a common experience.
It was so many things. It was really great. I mean, I had these very vague ideas for what it was going to be like, and I feel like I kind of exceeded the expectations. It ended up being all these different things I was hoping at the same time. So I got to bike tour, you know, and got to see parts of Wisconsin and Minnesota that I had not spent time in anymore. I got to see a bunch of people I hadn't seen for a while and meet a bunch of people, just as you always do on a bike tour. But then, you know, at the end of a day when, you know, while you're touring, you appreciate everything, like finding water and any kind of meal, whatever. I'd get to go to a city and read, and people would like show up and listen to me read from a book.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
Which is crazy enough that people do that, period. And it's amazing when it happens here in Portland, you know, at Broadway Books tomorrow, for example.
Is that right?
Just as an example. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Just as an example.
Now we have to publish tonight.
I feel grosser saying that. Is there a shower in here?
You have to say what time.
It's 7 o'clock.
Where is Broadway Books?
Broadway Books is on Broadway. On the east side, I don't actually know the address.
That makes sense.
Well, Broadway Books, located between 19th and 18th, vaguely on Broadway.
Well, where can people find anything about you and your book? Where would they go on the internet, for example?
BrianBensonWrites.com.
There we go. WRITES.
Yeah, that would be pretty amazing if it was the other stuff. been campaigning hard for the rights of Brian Bensons for decades.
All Brian Bensons everywhere.
Totally.
Are you going to write a book about bike touring for your book? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, just like this endless meta loop. Until my
books.
Brain explodes. Yeah.
Just two mirrors pointed at each other.
Infinity.
Well, would you like to do a reading?
A reading?
I know we're kind of on the spot here. And we also have headlines and mail, so if we did some of those, would you come back maybe between headlines and mail with a small segment from your book?
Yeah, I could do that. How small are we talking about?
Whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Aaron's about like six to seven inches.
About half
inches.
The book.
Okay. I was thinking like laterally on the page. I mean, if you want to go like as like for the thickness of the whole book.
Yeah, you're like a good sized paragraph or something like that.
Was the best of times. Was the worst of times.
You should write that, man. That's
that's a great
would sell.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let Brian deliberate for a minute, and we'll do the news.
Let's do some news.
Aaron, do you have the machine with the news on it?
I have a machine.
All right.
And I can get some news.
Fantastic. Well, let's do that.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night light. Pedal just as fast as the leg, the letter. Your pedal just as fast as we can.
I'm sorry, I actually missed the cue. Was that, did you have one now? Oh, no, okay, never mind. All right. I'm sorry, I'm kind of bad at actually cues.
Actually, it's not showing on my little drive. I wonder if it's because I have it open over there.
Oh, that. Could, well, I tell you what, I'll read some news.
Oh, wait, there it is.
Okay.
Oh, don't worry, folks. We'll edit that part out.
Of course, as we always do.
Yep. From Alaska Dispatch News, bike work bike routine allows couple to take long cycling treks. And this is from Phil?
Yep, Phil in Alaska.
All right. Lael Wilcox and Nicholas Carman work until they have enough savings, then travel. Quote, we left town on our bicycles. This has been the approximate pattern ever since. Ride, work, ride. Falling into that pattern became both natural and rewarding. Work hard with a purpose, save money, don't worry too much, save money. Sleep outside, ride a bike, don't buy stuff, don't worry, ride a bike, save money. Work hard and eventually quit your job because your life is more important.
Yeah, that's kind of a, I like the way that's put. And obviously it's not for everyone. And I think there's a lot of value to being like, you know, rooted in a place for a while. But these folks have a really interesting story and you can read more about it on Alaska Dispatch News.
Yeah, this is honestly, I might challenge, this might be for everybody except for maybe the bike part. Like if you take, no, seriously, if you take like the bike out of it and like just insert whatever thing you're into, I think that's a just a great philosophy for life.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like don't let things get in the way of the stuff you care about.
Yeah,
I think that's what we're all going for here. Yeah. Next
from TriMet, announcing the plans for e-fare implementation in 2017.
Also, not about bikes.
In the new e-fare system, you choose the most convenient way to pay for your fare on bus or train. You'll be able to use any or all of the following. A fare card available from neighborhood grocery stores, as well as convenience stores and pharmacies, or your smartphone via mobile ticketing, or your mobile wallet using Near Field Communications, NFC, or your own credit/debit card, including American Express, Discover, MasterCard, and Visa contactless smart cards.
And this is basically TriMet is catching up with every other major transit provider in major cities domestically and around the world.
Yeah.
So this is good news for people in Portland. And also, this is a sweet story.
Also from TriMet, this is an amazing story. Line 15 rider turns 102. Get special birthday bus. And this is from Logan.
Logan Smith.
Logan
down in California.
Smith. Logan Smith down in California gets TriMet news for us.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Logan. We're so behind the times here. Happy 102nd birthday, Vita. This morning, along with three generations of her family, we surprised this Line 15 rider with a special birthday bus. Vita stays active and mobile by walking daily and using the bus and Max for her longer trips. We think she might be one of our oldest riders. Do you know any other centenarians who ride?
Which is awesome.
She's 102? Yeah.
She's 102. She looks pretty good for 102.
Yeah.
I like that right above that picture, it says Brian Benson with Leah Benson. Oh.
As it is now displayed on the computer. This is a glimpse of the future. Yeah, but no, that's actually super cool.
Leah, either you shrink or Brian, you grow really tall.
I mean.
Yeah. So anyways, that was pretty awesome. Yeah. And yeah. This was a Facebook post on TriMet's Facebook page, I think. And there were other commenters who talked about their relatives who were like 103, 105, wow, something like that, that also take
bus
transit. Yeah, which is pretty fantastic.
That's so
I'm
cool
hoping I live to be that long and still shuffle onto a bus and pay with a contactless credit card.
Or whatever technology they have.
Or whatever, yeah, they take it out of my brain with waves. I don't know. So, yeah.
There'll be a barcode on your forehead.
Exactly, yes, yes. Brian, would you like to give us a reading?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to read one of this. This little excerpt actually plays into what we were just talking about for a very, very long time about junk food.
Oh, yes.
And it does not directly quote Leah Benson, but it totally steals a line from Leah that I think you will recognize at the very end. So maybe I have some problems there. We can talk about it afterward. Cool. I just totally stole her words. So
she's
this is that
acknowledgments, right?
Yeah, totally.
Leah's such a good sport.
She gets royalties, doesn't she? Doesn't she?
I mean, yeah, I get so many royalties too. You know, we're all getting loaded off of this thing. So this is set in just a little bit into the book. We are in northern Minnesota and have been in this really beautiful area, just swimming in lake after lake. Right here, we've just been cliff jumping at this amazing river and, you know, kind of have this idea that we have momentum and everything is going well. And so we're maybe not thinking about how to keep things going well. So we packed our things, pulled on the Lycra and the Hide the Lycra shorts and started to walk the bikes back to the road. I've been out of the river maybe 10 minutes, but already I felt beads of sweat on my forehead, a tingling ache on my tongue. I reached for a water bottle. Shit. I looked up at Rachel. Do you have any water? No, I used the last of mine for the coffee. Remember? I thought you had some left. I did, I said, but then I used it for the dishes, by which I meant I drank it while doing the dishes. Well then, Rachel said over her shoulder, this should be fun. It was not fun. And it wasn't the heat, wasn't even the humidity that really got me, or rather it was, but only because I was working so hard. West of Ilgin Falls, it was all hills. I imagined a chummy group of highway engineers challenging themselves to design a route that never, not even for one measly foot, flattened out. By the 5-mile mark, my eyes were sweat-stung, my temples pounding, my gums raw. I felt like I'd spent all morning gargling fiberglass insulation. Rachel, I could only assume, was feeling the same way. She'd quickly fallen silent and was now staring at the pavement, gamely pushing the pedals. According to our map, the next town, Finland, was just 10 miles away. A 10-mile ride, I thought, was nothing. I was wrong. Absent water and present the scorching sun, a 10-miler was murder, and for that matter, so was an 8-miler or a 6-miler or whatever paltry distance we'd ridden by the time we saw that heaven-sent roadside bait shop. We crash-parked the bikes and burst inside, and before I knew it, we were sitting in a gravel lot, our backs against a propane-cooled ice chest, our water bottles refilled but untouched, both of us bloated from the king-size Snicker bars and liter bottles of Mountain Dew we just inhaled at 9:42 in the morning. I closed my eyes and smiled and said, I'm not sure anything has ever tasted that good. I know, Rachel said, I kind of want more candy. So let's get more candy. We got more candy. Also, soda. Also, a kind of weird look from the lady at the counter. That morning, we might have learned a boring lesson about foresight and preparation. We did not learn such a lesson. We didn't so much learn anything, actually. But we did remember, both of us, having long ago imagined that the best thing about growing up would be getting you to eat candy whenever we wanted. And now we agreed we'd been so, so right.
Yay.
That was fabulous. And that's such a common experience, right? Because yeah. You're out there and you're like, well, opportunity knocks. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for that the opportunity.
Awesome. Yeah.
And thank you, Leah, for that insight that I just stole and claimed as my own.
Again, that's
funny time. That's what twins are for.
Yep. That's right. That's Going Somewhere, a memoir by Brian Benson. Available at, anywhere good books are sold, but especially at Powell's.
Especially at Powell's.
Yeah. And we like Powell's. They're not paying us. We just like them because they're local.
Take a drink, Krista.
That's right.
Plug. It's a drinking game that someone plays with their show.
Right. Okay. Let's see. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, yes. BrianBensonWrites.com.
.com.
All right. One more thing we got.
What is that?
Technical malfunctions.
We got technical problems.
No, actually, here it is. This is what we got.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
Leah, did we have that that music last time you were in?
No,
I couldn't remember.
I'm
okay,
impressed.
There we go. Yeah. Excellent. Is it okay if I burn through some of these?
Yeah, go
ahead. All right. Jim shares the Tiger Lock, which is a very innovative lock. So you go to tigrlock.com, and it looks pretty cool. Logan, he recommends these, MKS apparently is the maker of the quick-release pedal that you may want to check out since you do so much bike boxing and pedal removal, which that sounds interesting
to
me.
Yeah, I was checking them out.
Okay, there we go.
They're pretty cool.
All right, so there's that. Russ Roca devised a great method for carrying large amounts of water by bike while touring. He wrote a review for the tool he used on his Epicurean Cyclist blog. And that was the MSR Dromedary and S-Beaners, just hanging some water off of his saddle. This is super old. Oh, also, Logan has used this method, and it works great. Roger in Santa Cruz, this is old, but I don't think we shared it on the show yet, and I want to share it because I think it's funny.
Sure.
Brock, I was enjoying my coffee this morning and peacefully listening to the podcast with Ellie Tallheimer. Then you gave pedal removal instructions using a blowtorch, and if that failed, pulling out a pistol and blasting the pedal to tarnation. Well, a mouthful of coffee erupted and soiled a lot of clothes. Damn it. And I told him Brown is in right now. This marked two spit takes in 2 weeks, one by a listener and I think one by you.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
No, it was me.
They all happened in sequence. Tim Mooney, that's our friend with pedalshift.net. He's getting prepared to box up his bike, ran into a severely stuck pedal. There's a theme here. I had done some work on the drivetrain. They torqued them up super tight. Luckily, I have a pedal wrench with more leverage handy, so it wasn't a problem at home. On the road, I used to go with tried and true liberal greasing of the threads and put just the slightest tightening force on the pedals. That way, I can get the pedals on and off with a 99-cent crescent wrench I bring with. Eric Iverson found kind of your tattoo.
It's somewhat like the inverse of my tattoo.
I guess it's just a chain ring. Let me tilt this over here so everyone can see. It's a guy.
Mine's
with
the back end of the chain ring.
Yes.
The front end.
Yes.
Of the chain ring.
Yes. But also, not chain grease. It was a tattoo. So anyways, that's pretty awesome. I think that's it. Anybody else have anything they want to add before we wrap up this little show?
We never talked about what we were drinking.
Oh, yeah. What did we drink?
I thought it was going to be really serious for a second.
No, but it is essential.
Yes.
It's kind of central to the show.
Definitely. Well, it's what...
somewhat to the chagrin of some of our listeners, but to the enjoyment of many.
I'm going
to
say this is... I'm not going to say it.
I don't know what we're talking about.
I know. That's why I didn't say it. Hilliard Amber. Leah, you're having one?
I'm having one.
And this is one pint of beer from Seattle. It's pretty good. I liked it.
And you went with an amber this time.
I did. Yeah. Well, this was on Brian's recommendation because it's hot.
It's warm.
Yeah. Who else is drinking things?
I'm drinking a San Pellegrino.
Ah, yes.
Pompelmu. It's grapefruit. It's pretty bitter.
Pamplemousse. Baguette.
Oh, yeah. No.
No?
Different language,
oh, okay.
Right?
Never mind.
No? I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't speak that language.
It's grapefruit. It's bitter.
Cool. Yes.
Cool. I got the... Hopworks Urban Brewery Survival Stout, malt beverage with coffee added.
Yeah.
It's very delicious. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've kind of been avoiding stouts since I got here. Just I haven't been in the mood for them, but
Ooh. No,
this was actually really good.
You've been doing pilsners. Most.
Yeah, a lot of pilsners.
Yeah. That's good. No, that's good. But the best stouts are in Portland.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Well, then I should take advantage while I'm here.
Brian, what did you have?
I have, courtesy of Brock, the oatmeal pale ale from Burnside.
And we should say courtesy of our generous donors, who we will list in just a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who else? There was somebody. I don't know if I sent this in or not. I cannot find it. Damn it. We'll thank them next time around. But someone had a problem downloading our show and sent us $25 to fix the problem. Oh, so
what?
Thank you, generous listener. It wasn't a problem of money. It was just coding. But
yeah.
But we appreciate that. So I will find that person's name. We will thank them next episode. But yes, thanks to all of our donors
for
buying
us beer. What if it costs us more than $25 to fix this problem?
It didn't.
Then
it was free.
Okay. Fix it and you'll...
I did it in under 5 minutes. I think I fixed it.
I mean, thank you.
Thank you, generous donor, to be announced later.
Brock, could I add one more thing?
Yes, please do.
The twin balance is you know, gone a little bit in my favor, and I wanted to just ask what my identical fraternal twin here. For listeners who had not heard the episode that she was on, what she might be up to here in the fine city of Portland, Oregon.
Well, and connected, I think, right? Connected,
yeah, very connected.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mainly just repping for my twin brother, Brian Benson. But in my free time, I own a bike shop called Gladys Bikes.
Oh, we didn't even mention that.
No.
I'm a bad person.
It's okay.
Gladys, I'm sorry.
You know. Oh.
Everyone. Gladys.
I swore I wasn't going to do that one.
It just means you have
made
to
him wait
come
for
back.
It.
Yeah. Again.
Again.
No, Gladys Bikes, run by Leah Benson.
Great shop. You can
yes.
get a fitting there.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite fun.
Yeah.
You can join their saddle library. Also quite fun.
Also quite fun.
Everything's free.
Yeah.
Everything's free.
Like money.
Someone's going to walk into your
Thanks,
shop.
Brian.
I heard on the Sprocket podcast that
like
everything's free.
It's going to help a lot.
Strike that. Reverse it.
Yeah.
Yes. It's up on a new location since last we had you on the show, right?
It's true. At 29th in Alberta.
Yeah. And
but we did talk about that move.
We did.
Oh, wow.
That was a fun move.
That was great.
It was a really fun move.
Good.
Thanks,
yeah.
guys.
Yeah. That was our public radio moment. Yeah, it was nice.
It was good. It was really good. Yeah.
Well,
took a lot of work, but it was worth it, guys.
And we saved the planet.
You're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Let's put this baby to bed.
Benson and Brian Benson.
Are we ready to put this baby to bed?
Let's.
Good night,
I guess we'll be ending the show at this point.
Okay. This has been real. That wasn't a very public radio thing to say.
No, they wouldn't say it's been
Okay.
It's
ready?
It's very nice having these two guests. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message or text to us at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at The Sprocket Podcast.
Operators standing by.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Herbert for our headline sounder. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katrina Mellengard, Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, and Cameron Lee.
And the Anonymous Donor Foundation.
All right, everyone. Brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
Woo!
going to say, Ryan, would you sign the book for me on mic?
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. There you go.
All right.
If you can, sign it close to the microphone.
You want to hear?
I want to hear the scripture.
You want to hear it happen.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So he's opening up now.
That's him signing. I thought I was improvising.
Are you a lefty?
I'm a lefty.
Oh, my God, I'm a lefty. Best day ever.
Maybe you guys are the twins.
I'm a lefty, too.
Oh, you are?
Oh, my God.
We might have talked about this.
Okay.
I'm just going to like hit the mic with my hand over and over again. Who am I signing it for?
Oh, how about Roxkin and Aaron?
To my biggest fans, please don't tie me to a bed and break my knees with a 2x4.
Just write that.
That did not go the direction I thought it would.
Yeah. I don't know what Brian said to lead you to believe that was a possibility.
What, did you just tell the right one, eh?
Don't go changing. Love ya.
Hags.
Let's stay in touch this summer.
Class is 94 rules. Did that get on mic? I don't know if that got on mic or not.
So, listeners, you can't see this, but he just wrote the first chapter to his next book.
It's true. I've been trying forever.
Thank you, Brian. A Sprocket Studios production.